I started last night. I'm starting?
Yeah,
sure. Oh, I'll take it.
You got some machines over here? Is this a good deal?
Rabbi Sai, I just want to thank everyone here. This wonderful opportunity we have to get together and grow together. And really something that I truly look forward to. It's not just Sam Divrei Psicha. I actually like this new minhag that Rabbi Schnall just mentioned that from last time, starting early, because then I could just gain from the two Talmidei Chachamim sitting to the right and to the left of me, that really have such inspiring words. And I really enjoy getting together and growing together. There's a special schus on Chanukah to grow as a tzibur. And Baruch Hashem, we have this unique opportunity. Every shtickle Torah that you hear, a lot of the shtickle Torah that you hear starts off with something about how Tumo Hutra B'tzibur, the whole Nes of Chanukah. And I think that the Hashkacha was like that. That every Asifa, every Dvar Torah, every Hisairus on Chanukah should start with the concept of tzibur. Should start with the fact that the real Nes of Chanukah only exists from the fact that we're getting together and growing together. I said in my we had a little asif from my shul last week. So I said that the Avnei Nezer asked the kasha. Everyone asked the kasha that the Rambam says that you have to give up the shirt off your back for the mitzvah of Neiris Chanukah, but it's against the regular rules and regulations. We actually learn from a sugya in Bava Kama, Mirtz Hashem, and Daf Tes, that the Rashba quotes Rishonim, the Ravid, that say, and Paskin and Shulchan Aruch, that until Chomesh, until a fifth of your property, that's the amount that you're obligated to give up for a mitzvah's essay. Yet, when it comes to the mitzvah of Chanukah, there seems to be other rules and regulations. It's breaking the rules that you have to spend much more than a fifth of your nechassim. So the Avnei Nezer has a tshuva that he says that also relates to the concept of tzibur. I can't just be yotzei my mitzvah of Neiris Chanukah and focus on my own personal obligations. Maybe when it's my own personal obligations, then I could limit the amount of assets that it could be up to a fifth. But when it comes to a mitzvah that's fundamentally based off of Persume Nisa, it's a chova l'achirim, it's a chova for us to grow together. So then the Avnei Nezer says, then it's afilu mocher ksuso, then you even have to give up the shirt that from your back, and that's really the way the parshiyos of Chanukah start. Yosef starts his Yerida to Mitzrayim as Achaya Noichi Mevakesh. I have to be able to do this avoda, this Tumah Hutra B'tzibur, this Yontav of Chanukah. It has to be with an Asifa. It has to be with gathering together. So Yashikayach for coming together, Yashikayach for organizing this beautiful Asifa, and we'll just try to share some words of Torah, some words of Isairis that could help us. That could help us grow throughout the year. There is a statement that I just saw this past a few days ago from the Sfas Emes that I really wasn't sure what he meant. It's a very interesting statement. But before I introduce the Sfas Emes, I want to focus on a line that we focus in the davening and we sing about that really connects to this week's parsha, Avoleinu Letova. There is a midah that's introduced in this week's parsha that is called Navon. A person who has Bina. A person who has Bina who doesn't only have Chachma. Paro says to Yosef, I have many qualified individuals, I have many possible interpretations to my dream, and it's not that they're lacking in their chachma, but they're lacking in the fact that ein navon kamoicha, there's no one that has bina like you. Bina is a deeper maven dover mitoch dover. It's not just understanding on a theoretical level, but it's bringing things down and understanding to read between the lines. But what's interesting is when we speak about Bina, how it's associated not only in this week's Parsha, but always Parshas Miketz is read Shabbos Chanukah, that Midah of Bina is found in Shabbos Chanukah, this Navon, it's also in our Tfilos. Right? Bnei Vina Yimei Shmona. What is it about Bina that Bina a person has, now he understands Yimei Shmona? I can count to eight. I'm a math major. I understand what Yimei Shmona is. One, two, three, four. And as much as you want to complicate things, how you want to light it, and how many candles, Lamaisa, it's 8 days. What's so Bina dick about Yimei Shmona? Bnei Vina Yimei Shmona. So Sfasemes writes something about this Yontif of Chanukah. The Sfasemes says something incredible. He says there's another time that we count to eight. What's the other time that we count to eight, says the Sfasemes? Yom Kippur. Sfasemes says when we do the Hazal Yom Kippur, so we count eight times. We're mazeh, we sprinkle the blood. But the Sfasemes says, but look at the way that you count. When you're mazeh the dam on Yom Kippur, and you sprinkle all the bloods on Yom Kippur, Rabbi said, we know from the way we sing it in Chazaras Hashatz and Musaf, Achas, Achas v'Achas, Achos u'shtayim, Achas v'Shalosh, Achas v'Arba, and ultimately until Achas v'Sheva. Says the Sfas Emes, that is the Shmona Yomim of the Neiris Chanukah. What does that mean? What is the Sfas Emes driving at? So Rabbi Yisai, there is a Gemara. In the Gemara in Shabbos, it was a Gemara. On Chaf Aleph Amud Beis, that the Gemara introduces a fascinating din. And if you would have asked me before the Gemara was written, I would never have voted for such a halacha, and I think it really doesn't fit with our other halachas that we have on the other Yamim Tov. The Gemara says, Amrua Rabbanan Kameda Abaye Mishmeda Rabbi Yirmiyah. They said in front of our Rabaye the following din, V'loy Kibla, and Baruch Hashem, I'm with Abaye, I'm in good hands. Not only would I have not accepted this, Abaye did not accept such a concept. He also Rabban Amr Rabbanan Kameda Abaye Mishmeda Rabbi Yochanan V'Kibla. But when what? When they came and they said in front of Abaye, Bishmeder Rabbi Yochanan v'Kibla. So what's the halacha? What's the halacha that he wasn't accepted? Kovsa ein zakakla. If it goes out, you don't have to ignite it. The Gemara says, Hadlaka oisim mitzvah, but kovsa ein zakakla. So the Gemara says, Abaye says, once he accepted this halacha, that once you light the candle and it goes out, it's good. Amar Izakai Gamir Salishmaitse Meikara. If I would have been Zoicha, I would have accepted this originally. Vagamar, so the Gemara says, who cares? You learned it now. The Gemara says, no, Nafkamina Lagirsi Biyankasa. So literally, Rashi explains, it would have been helpful for me to know this from what a younger age, because what we know at a younger age, Rabbi Yisrael, remember this. What you know as a younger age, that's something that's retained, that's something that sticks around forever. Once you learn things at a later age, it's harder to remember. Zagirsa de Yankas. So the Gemara tells us this concept of Hadlaka Oisim Mitzvah. This Gemara tells us this concept of Hadlaka Oisim Mitzvah. What does that mean, Hadlaka Oisim Mitzvah? It means that you have to light the candle. You have to light the candle, and if it goes out, that's not a problem. As long as what? As long as I put in the effort at the beginning to try to make sure that it would light. That is exactly what the Bina and what the Chanukah and what the Sfas Emes is telling us. Rabbi Yisai, in Bayis Sheni, once HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the Nes, he specifically sent us to the Nes of the Shemen. And he specifically introduced this mitzvah of the mitzvah of Chanukah because HaKadosh Baruch Hu said we're now reaching a new era. This new era is no longer the Zman of Hanocha Isa Mitzvah. There's not going to be Nevi'im. There's not going to be revelation coming from Shemayim that you get and everything's clear and it's Torah Shebechsav. No, it's going to be harder. It's going to be difficult. It's not going to be as clear as day. It's going to be the world of Torah Shebaal Peh. But says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Torah Shebaal Peh, when you're madlik, that ultimately will allow me to respond in kind and to connect to you in that same way that I did with Nevi'im. Chochom Odif Minovi. The Ramban writes that Bizman HaZeh, we go to Talmidei Chochomim, it has a din of going to a Novi. It might even be in a higher level. Kadosh Baruch Hu says that the way we approach the Yom Tov of Chanukah is that you have to what? Be madlik. Just be madlik. Light a candle. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'll take care of the rest. I'll respond in kind. Perhaps that's exactly what the Sfas Emes is saying. Yes, there was an incredible nes. There was an incredible nes of Sheva Yamim, like the Beis Yosef says. But that nes was only capable of happening if we had an achas lemala. If we started the process with a hadlaka oitzim mitzvah. If we started and we realized that once we are maglik the fire, even if we don't have the kalim, Rabbi Yisai, even if it's so hard and I sit in shir and I'm just not chopping, and I'm working and I'm working and I'm working and I'm ready to be miyayish because it's not sinking in. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, that's when I will respond with the seva lemat. That's when I will respond with that bechina that I had in Bayis Rishon, as long as now you show me that you want it in the hadlaka oisim. There's a sefer, the Zer Zov in Maseches Shabbos, he says something incredible. It's from Rav Zev Wolf Landau. So Talmud of the Rebbe from Kotsk. He said a beautiful word. He said, Hadlaka oisim mitzvah. You have to be madlik. But kavsa ain't a zakukla. If it goes out, don't worry. But you just make sure that you have enough oil in there that a Kodesh Baruch Hu could respond with the siyata d'shmaya. If you demonstrate that a Kodesh Baruch Hu, I want it to light. I don't know what's going to happen with winds. I don't know what's going to happen outside. I can't control the world, but I can demonstrate to you, Hadlaka Oisim Mitzvah, I'm putting in the fire. I don't know if Kav say at the top, but that's not my issue. That is the Nes of Chanukah. You have an Achas Lemala, if it starts off with an Achas Lemala, then you're going to have the Nes of Chanukah for the other seven Yomim to answer the Beis Yosef's Kasha for Shiva Yomim. That's B'nei Vina. Ah! I don't only have chachma. I understand how to count to eight. I understand that it's achas. Achas v'achas. I have to link the sheva yomim to the achad yoim. Achas v'achas. Achas u'shtayim. Achas u'shmoyne. It's not just counting to eight. It's a binadik accounting. It's accounting as a number. I wish I would have known this. Girsa d'yakusah. I wish I'd have known this in the beginning of my yeshiva days. But it's okay if I fail. Because it's not chokhmah yibamis. It's not your failing out. It's not if you get up on a plane, it's going to be on your record and your door. It's not if you can't impress me with a shtickle Torah, then that's it. No, it's hadlaka oisim mitzvah. We're pashut setting up a din for failure. Hadlaka oisim mitzvah. Kovsa in a zakakla. Ignore it. Ignore it. Doesn't matter what you produce. Why are you setting up such a din like that? Because that's what happened over here. Close with the following vart that I live by, Rabbi Yisai. I had an opportunity in Eretz Yisrael to speak to some of the future Talmidim in the yeshiva. I can't tell you how many times I repeated this vart. Because this is what's on the mind of the Lomdim in yeshiva right now. Because guys are struggling. And that's what you're supposed to be doing. You're supposed to be struggling, Rabbi Yisai. And you're supposed to be failing. Because as long as you're showing HaKadosh Baruch Hu that I want to be madlik, and I'm trying to set up the shem that could last, that's all he wants, and then he will take care of the rest. Kedusha Arim asked the Kasha, Rabbi Yisai. I'm not saying this tam, I live by this var. Kedusha Arim asked the Kasha. The Gemara tells us, Yagata umatzasa tam. If a person says, I put in the toil, I was madlik, and then it was successful, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed it to continue to light, and it kept lighted for 7 days, so then tamen, believe him. Now if a person that says, lo yagata umatzasa, if a person says, I didn't put in yagia and it worked, al tamen, don't believe such a person. If a person says, what? Yagati, I put in the effort, v'lo imatzasi, and I wasn't maitze, and I didn't come out with anything, also al tamen. Only yagata umatzasa. Rabbi Yisai, Dusha Rim Matzasa? If I'm walking down the street and I found what they just they found a diamond ring in the middle of the city, right? The police found the diamond ring in the middle of the city. Did they return it? What was the maskana of the story? I just heard they found it. Okay, there's no hadlaka over there. Whatever. So Rabbi say, you find the metziah in the street. Is that yigiyah? That's not something I worked for. Metziah is the opposite of yigiyah. Metziah is like, oh, it's my lucky day. I have mazel. I just won the lottery. That's what a metziah is. Dusharim says it's a steer mina yubei. You have a yegiyah, yagata, umatzasa. Says the Dusharim, no, that's Talmud Torah. That's the Shemin of Ner, the Or Torah. That's the hadloko of achas, achas v'achas, allowing HaKadosh Baruch Hu to respond with the Sheva Yomim after your madlik, and making sure that you have the Shemin, and let HaKadosh Baruch Hu take care. I put in my yegiyah, I don't know if I have the kelim, if I have the ability. And sometimes I feel like I don't, and the Yetzer Hara wants to tell me, you're a layutzluch, you're not going to be able to be matzliach in Torah. Says the Chiddush Arim, that's against the Gemara. The Gemara says, any hatzloch in Talmud Torah, at the end of the day, is a what? Is HaKadosh Baruch Hu responding? Is a metziah. You have to put in the yegiyah, you have to put in the hatzlocha, you have to set yourself up as best as possible for hatzlocha, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you siyata d'shmaya, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you a metziah. So yes, it's both. It's yagata, and then it's matzos. So Mirtz Hashem Rabbi Yisai, as the Avnei Nezer says, we should not make Havdalah after Chanukah, because this should b'meila flow in to the rest of the days of our year. That Amir Tzashem, after this Chanukah, we should have a charge to be misyageya, but have siyata d'shmaya with the other Shiva Yamin of the Nes of Chanukah, the answer to the Beis Yosef's Kasha, linking the one day to the 7 days to be bnei vina of what really Yimei Shmoyne has had to count one to.
So Chanukah obviously revolves around the miracle of the oil, and by extension, it means that Chanukah also revolves around the fact that the Greeks, in their conquest of the Beis Hamikdash, made it impossible for the Kohanim to continue the day-to-day avoda, and specifically lighting the menorah, because they defiled, they were matamed all the olive oil that was used in the Beis Hamikdash. And actually, because that's so much the focal point of the whole holiday, that when the Gemara asked my Chanukah, right away, that's what we talk about. Look at the Rambam has a list of 10 different things that they did. But that is my Chanukah. Timu kol hashmanim, they made all of the olive oil and the Mikdash impure and unable to be used. It's very interesting. If I close my eyes and I try to conjure up an image of what exactly took place 2,000 years ago. So I'm very bothered by something. Because you can contrast what actually happened and what's described to us with what also could have taken place instead. So, Lomashal, imagine for a moment the following. Let's say the mafia decides that it's time to get back at someone who, didn't live up to their expectations. And Lomashal, that individual owns a liquor store. So you can just picture, late one night, the mob sends in a bunch of their goons with a couple of baseball bats, and they spend an hour smashing up every bottle in the place, leaving the place in ruins, and escaping right before the police shows up. So that's a scene that's fit for a gangster movie, right? Okay. Now try to imagine a different approach. Instead of sending in the goons with the baseball bats, the Godfather decides to send them in with a few bottles of liquid soap and hand sanitizer, right? He comes around the store, and the boss says, Louie, throw that in the scotch over there, will you? Or, Tony, how about some of that antibacterial stuff in the Johnny Walker, please? And after a little while, they close up all the bottles, they gently close the door behind them, and, they lock up and they go home. Can you imagine something like that? Can you imagine that? Like, I don't know about you, but I'd be very disappointed if I paid $8 for, for a movie ticket to see that, okay? Whatever. You're anticipating a certain violence, a certain excitement, right? And here we go. Just break a few seals, close it up, touch this one, touch that one, spit into one of them when no one's looking. Where are the baseball bats, right? On both sides, the Yevonim were a world superpower. Mamish. Mamish. And they demonstrated that strength in so many other ways when they dominated the Jews for many, many years. So why didn't that demonstration of power somehow make it into the temple as well? That's a shaila. It's not really my shaila. I embellished it a little bit. But Rabbi Yashav asked this shaila. He didn't know from the mafia, but what he says is basically that the Greeks' plan of action was entirely calculated and very deliberate, and moreover symbolic of what exactly was at play in the Jews' struggle with the whole story in Hanukkah and the Greeks. The Greeks were metame the taros. To use the Lashon Bavakama, you learn in the first parak, instead of the most overt and destructive attack, the Yevonim decided to perpetrate a hezek she'ino nikar. They didn't want to smash up all the oil and break up all the jugs. The nature of the attack on the Jews was designed to make its mark in a way that was very, very inconspicuous. To damage and to defile and to corrupt, to distort the purity of Jewish culture in a way that you almost couldn't even notice it, but was damaging all the same, no baseball bats. That's too obvious. Tam kol shman shebehechal in a way that was imperceptible. The attempts to Hellenize the Jews, which, by the way, it's no coincidence. Maybe this is why we're so successful. It was Mamre successful. And that success had an impact, a negative impact, that lasted through the end of Bayis Sheni. It's because it infiltrated Yiddishkeit in a way that stayed under the radar, to allow Jewish culture to seep into the Jewish culture. And it took a lot of courage to be able to fight back. But it's not just courage. Chazal gave us a mitzvah to respond to that in the form of lighting the candles, but it's not just lighting candles. If you look at the Lashonis and Chazal about lighting the candles, there's more than just the hadlaka, even though we say hadlaka is a mitzvah. But unlike Shabbos, there's no Isser l'shtamish b'hem. Adrabah, the point of Shabbos candles is to get the hanah. When it comes to Chanukah, it's lirosim bavad, only to look. But not just liros, but to look very deeply and to contemplate. There's an Indian to spend time just watching the neros. When the Chazal tell us how high the menorah is allowed to be, can't be more than 20 amos. So it doesn't say that you can't see it above 20 amos. It doesn't say you're not going to notice it. It's above your line of vision. Sakta Gemara lo shalta be'ina. All the Lashonos Gemara could be lo shalta be'ina. Shalta be'ina, literally, like shlita, to have control, to master. The ayin doesn't have mastery. In other words, the goal of Chanukah candle is to see so clearly, to have a dominating perception of everything you see in front of you. More than just what meets the eye, more than what's just visible. Because that was the chab. The timul kol hashmanim was to do a damage that no one could see. And it was the b'nei bina, like Rav Velzon said, the b'nei bina who are maven davar mitoch davar, to see more than what meets the eye, to see deeper the damage that the Greeks had done. That was the power to respond with Yimei Shmona, Kavu Shira Anana. That was the subtle attack. And in every generation, the Itzahara, that still lingers from the Zman of Yavan, finds a way to try to hit us in subtle ways, also under the radar. And in particular, it hits us when it comes to maintaining, not just learning, not just following halacha, but maintaining Jewishness, Yiddishkeit as a culture. That's where we were attacked. And that's the hardest thing to notice sometimes. I apologize, it's a tricky thing to try to address in a big forum. So I may not be on the mark, and you can give me the criticism later, but it's something that Avopichon has to be addressed. The reality is we're very desensitized. We're very desensitized to the world around us, to the culture that we live in, that's already inside of us as well, not just outside of us, it's inside of us, because we've absorbed it all the time that we've been we've been living in America, New York, whatever it is. Lion King, it's just Lion King at length of the past. It's inside of us. So it's easy for it to slip in under the radar. There's a lot of kosher oil that's sitting nicely intact and in the bottle, secure, but it's tainted in a way that you can't really notice. That's the culture that's inside of us that we don't appreciate where it's been affected. And that's what I want to try to focus on. LaMushel, this is not an example. This is a mushel. Football season. Super Bowl is coming up every year. Some guys in the Shia Rebbe are going to be watching the big game. Come over to our apartment. We got wings. We got this. We got that. Don't worry. Halftime, we're going to be watching Moshe Tzvi giving a Shia. Shkayach. Okay, right? So what's wrong with football? kosher oil, right? So I always say to people, do me a favor. You want me to come? Fire all the cheerleaders in the NFL, and I'll be there. No problem. Of course, you watch the kosher halftime show. But like, there's so many things on the sideline that I like football. I enjoy football. Great. But what about all the things that come along, all the baggage, the whole package that no one even pays attention to? When was the last time you heard a schmooze about a football game and the focus was on what was on the sidelines, right? When was the last time the focus was on the guy on the Jumbotron who's wearing no shirt because he painted his body and that's what we get excited about? And that's the guy you put on the Jumbotron, except when it's Rublev, okay? But if it's not Rublev, so it's the guy who painted, right? Those are my role models. Those are my role models, right? The guy who really, it's 30 degrees in Green Bay, but he's out there without a shirt on, right? What else did he pay $200 for those tickets for, right? To get on the screen. But we don't think about those things, but they have an effect on us. They have an effect on us. I'll tell you a story I'll never forget. Yitzhak Cohen is my Rebbe in MTA. And he told a story. I don't know if it's true. He said once that not all the stories are true, but I can see this happening. I see this happening. He said he was walking down Rechol Bar Ilan in Yerushalayim. Rechol Bar Ilan has always been a contested location. Shmir Shabbos, people driving down, they want to close it off, throwing rocks. He was walking down, there was a Chassidish Yid who started yelling, Shabbos, 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 when a car drove by. So Rabbi Cohen said he walked over to the guy and he said, excuse me, Rabbi Yid, do you really think because you're yelling Shabbos, 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 he's going to pull over, get out on the curb, take out a glass of wine and make Kiddush? You really think he's going to do that? I said, no, I don't know what that guy's going to do. That's not my business. I'm yelling Shabbos, not for him, I'm yelling for myself. Because every time I see a car go by, how is my Shabbos going to be the same? I live in the land of Yiddishkeit. I live in the holy city. And this is what I see. If I don't perpetuate inside of myself, when I see around me things that should be detestable, things that should bother me, I love the Jew, I don't like what he's doing, it should bother me when I see someone be Mechal Shabbos. If I don't make sure to invoke that, so then it's going to chip away from my sensitivity. And that's a muscle for everything that we have in our experience around us. It's not about Torah Mada, it's not about modern orthodoxy. Those are wonderful, lofty ideas. Soloveitchik spent a lot of time talking about how what an important avodah it is to live in the modern world. And if you're in sins, you're taking in Jewish engagements. And that's all important stuff. I'm not belittling that in any way. That's not what this is about. This is about where, when we live in a culture that's not native to our Torah values, we can engage culture. We have to. We are. That's what our lives are like. But sometimes we're flirting with that culture. Sometimes we're struggling with that culture without even knowing about it, based on the decisions we make, where we go, what we do, and we let those sensitivities become eroded if we don't respond to them. I want to give two short examples, and they probably don't apply to most people in this year. But try to take. I'm going to try to take. When you look at the Hanukkah candles, look deeply into the light and see where there's a little bit of that Timu Kol Hashmanim that we need to work on. The first, again, kosher oil in tainted state. Clothing and fashion are major marks of a culture. So do you have to wear black and white? 100% no. Do you have to wear a strimel and a gartel? Chilas a cover, you know, 100% no. Okay, but what you do choose to wear, whatever you feel is in style, so that's a product of your surroundings. That's the environment. So let's say, guy or girl, doesn't matter. We all have a concept of tznius. It's not just about how long the skirt is, whatever. But for a guy, okay, again, just as a muscle, because you don't have to go too far to encounter this. How tight a person's shirt or pants are, okay? So, or that's what you're wearing. Or for the girl, what she isn't wearing. So it's a statement. That concurrent with a desire to be in style is also a sense that I'm comfortable with being a person who walks out to the street and is provocative. And I'm trying to attract attention in not a healthy way. But forget about provocative. Forget about that. In my subconscious, what have I just put into my brain? I've opened up a pathway where there's a notion that how I define myself, who I am, how I define other people, is by externals that don't matter. How attractive I am, how attractive she is, what am I doing to bring that attraction to me? And again, by definition, you place priorities and values more on how I impact the world superficially instead of what's inside. Intellect, character, spirituality, the things that really matter, things that are elevated, things that are kaddish. When you think about it, it's a terrible shame. It's a danger to a person's trajectory. I want to thank a Talmud of mine I had a long conversation with yesterday. Just try to quote it briefly. He said a professor in college earlier this year, before they gave out the test, instead of yelling about how bad cheating is and how about it's Geneva's Das, said, how would you sacrifice your integrity for one test? Right? When you walk out of that test and you cheated, you are not the same person you were before. You're not the same person. Because you had a degree of honesty that you held yourself to as a gavra, as a yid, as a member of society, and you chipped away at that. You're not the same person for one test. So when I make choices, appreciate that I'm making a sacrifice. I'm making a sacrifice. And even if I don't dress that way, but I'm making it normal. I'm feeling comfortable with my surroundings. It's going to exist around us anyway. That's a reality. But I'm saying, like, it's okay with me, and that's who I am. And the externalism and the materialism and so forth, it becomes in our kishas. Instead of where the internal part of our consciousness, which is supposed to come from Torah, it's supposed to come from values of Yiddishkeit, it's replaced with something else. It's replaced with something else. Again, kosher oil, but with a tumor on it that you can't even see. Last thing, which this is out of the bounds of Baruch Hashem, the wonderful B'nai Torah who are here, but I just want to try to illustrate it. Entertainment, but more specifically, where we seek entertainment. So everybody here, this has nothing to do with the commentator, nothing to do with the current politics. Everyone here, Baruch Hashem, knows, you go outside, you have something on your head. You wear a yarmulke. That's my basic Jewish identity. Pashut. It informs who I am, what I do, what I don't do, how I respond to things. Pashut. I don't go anywhere without my yarmulke. Sometimes I can't wear a yarmulke. Put on a baseball cap. Could be the weather. Could be I'm going to a place where it's not safe. Or there's a fear I'm going to get discriminated against. Whatever it is. Okay, so there's exceptions. But if I change my yarmulke to a baseball cap, because I go to choose a way, you fill in the illustration, a way that I'm going to spend time in entertainment, I'm changing my head covering because I feel like this is not a place where a yarmulke belongs, then you need to think three times, four times, if you're going in the right place. Right, because if that's the source of my Jewish identity, what am I doing when I go there and I change my hat? Not because I don't want it to get wet in the rain. It's because I'm saying, like, I can't be a Jew 100% where I am right now. I can't. I need to hide from myself. My Rebbe was here. I put on the baseball cap, right? So I need to hide from myself also and not be who I really am. It's like walking out of the test, not the same person I walked in with. And even if I go home and I take off the hat and I'm wearing the yarmulke and I try to daven ma'ariv because Baruch should help you, yeah? I'm not the same person I was because my strong sense of Yiddishkeit, I now found a little place where I can cover that up. Where I look exactly the same as I did before, but I squirted a little soap inside the liquor. I add a little tumah. And no one else around me is going to notice it. Until it's time to light the menorah, and I see there's nothing left here for me to put in the cups. Tzbina, the Maven Dovrim, Tov Dovr, everyone has to sort of take their own lessons from what we're saying. Baruch Hu should give us the schus to take away from Chanukah, when we look at the lights, look at the oil that we put into our menorah, a notion of the Shemen Zayi Zach, the purity that we celebrate, the miracle that we found with the Kohen Gadol's stamp on it, is something that has to be treasured. That's something to celebrate. That's the whole Yontif. The whole Yontif is, we found a shtick Yiddishkeit that was untainted. And for our lesson, to ensure that we preserve and how we act despite the imperceptible negative impact that we can suffer, to preserve that purity, the oil that can have the stamp of the Kohen Gadol, and to go weiter with our Yiddishkeit with that mentality.
We were learning, there's a shir the other day, Rav Shimon Schwab's sefer on tefillah. We were learning the section on modim. And Rabbi Schwab said that the first thing we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for when we recite modim, every time we daven Shmona Esrei, is thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for being megala himself to us, letting himself be known to us. And even though Avram Avinu set out and he discovered Hashem. We also insert that into Modim, thanking Hashem that we come from a legacy of people who sort of figured out Hashem and transmitted it to us. But we thank Hashem for making it a little bit easier for us, both in the form of a Kaddish Baruch Hu interacting with the world at Sinai, and in the form of a Kaddish Baruch Hu giving us the Torah. And Rabbi Schwab says, if you look at the very first three words of the Torah, Bereishis Bara Elokim, you'll notice that after the word Elokim, the trup on the word Elokim is an asnachta, which means a pause. Bereishis Bara Elokim, stop, pause. And Rabbi Schwab, and maybe learn the Svarim as much as Rabbi Schnell does, but I think in somewhat uncharacteristic language, in very strong terms, Rabbi Schwab says, that asnachta, that pause, that stop, is much more critical than we sometimes realize. We're so excited to read on in the story. We want to learn the whole Torah. There's so much we want to get to. We want to get to so many other magnificent ideas that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to share with us. But Rabbi Schwab says, if you don't stop, Bereishis Bara Elokim. Rabbi Schwab says it the way that Sifrei Chassidus read that pasuk and say this part. Bereishis Bara Elokim doesn't just mean in the beginning God created, which is not even the correct translation according to Rashi. But Bereishis, the first thing you need to know, the foundation of all of your knowledge has to be Bara Elokim. Bereishis, the first thing you need to internalize in a deep way, to stop, as our Rebbeim have been describing, to be an Ish Navon, to be a person of Bina, a person who is able to infer something deeper, and not gloss over things, Shalta Eina, to have a shlita over something, a dominance over something, complete control of an idea. Bereishis, says Rav Schwab, the first thing you need to know and internalize in the deepest way is what? Is Bar Elokim, is that there's a creator to the world. Esnachta, pause. And don't move on until you've internalized it. This I think you could refer to as, you know, half jokingly as we're learning Bava Kama this year. But this is really the true Bava Kama. Right? Bereishis Bar Elokim is Rashi Tevos Bava. So this is the Bava Kama. This is Mamish the Bava Kama. The first Bava is Bereishis Bara Elokim. And from there, a person moves on. Rav Schwab, again, in uncharacteristically strong language, says, and if you're not going to stop, if you're not going to make that pause at the asnachta to really think about it, if you're going to not allow yourself to recognize some of that tumma that Rav Schnell was just describing, and I'm going to just add a little bit to that mahalich, right? Then Rav Schwab says, you might as well roll up the Sefer Torah and put it away. Might as well be goyle the Sefer Torah, because you're wasting your time. If it's not with the that pause and that awareness of Bereishis Bara Elokim, if you're not holding in these opening psukim of Bereishis and absorbing the fact that Bereishis, the first thing I need to know, is that Bara Elokim, then everything else is also going to be superficial. If these first three words are superficial. So I want to just build off of that, and really, really very much a hamshach of what Rabbi Schnell was just describing a moment ago. You look in the first three psukim of the Torah, and Chazal tell us in the Medrash, you're looking at all of world history, all of Jewish history. Va'aretz ha'isa sohu v'avohu v'choshech al p'nei sahom. The world was tohu and bohu. Rashi says, lashonos of emptiness, a tremendous sense of void. There was a choshech al p'nei sahom, a darkness that was hovering over the depths. And ruach elokim rachefes al p'nei amayim, and the Spirit of God hovering over the water. Very cryptic. Took him to try to learn some of these Rambans and Bereishis. And it's easy to try to understand, and on some level we're not supposed to understand Maisa Bereishis. These four expressions, Tohu, Bohu, Choshech, and Tahom, refer to the four exiles of Jewish history. Tohu is Bavel, Bohu is Madai, Choshech, darkness, is Yavam. It's Chanukah, is the Greek exile, and of course the response to Choshech is Or, which is why Chanukah is a celebration of light. The Medrash says, what was the Choshech of Yavan? And Tahom is Edom, is the fourth and final Gullus. It's Rome, it's Christianity, it's Western culture. It's where we find ourselves today in the post-Churban Bayis Sheni period. So the Medrash says, what's the Choshech of Yavan? So the Medrash says in Bereishis Rabbah, Shechshichu Einayim Shel Yisrael, they darkened our eyes, by making the following Gezerah, making the following decree. Kisvu Al Keren Hashor, She'ein lachem chelak b'lokei Yisrael. Very strange thing that they made us do. They write on the horn of an ox, on the Keren HaShor, that you don't have a portion in the Jewish God. To write on the horn of an ox. You should write on the horn of an ox. Other Midrashim tell us, the Rambam has in one of his famous letters, the Rambam quotes a Medrash that they had us write it on our doorways. had to hang a banner over your doorway. Maybe that's why the sugya of Chanukah is so much connected to mezuzah. The mezuzah at the doorway declares my belief in Hashem in this home. They wanted us to plaster over our doorways. Right? God is not found in such a place. A strange degree. Tisu al keren hashur, she'ein lachem chelek belokei Yisrael. What's the keren hashur? Why the keren hashur? What does the keren hashur represent? It's a sefer that came out a couple of years ago. It was a sefer, a very popular sefer on Chumash, that goes back quite some time, called the Pardes Yosef. So there's a certain style, for those who've seen the sefer, there's a certain style the Pardes Yosef has, and there's someone today who's continued in the style of the Pardes Yosef to put out other volumes called Pardes Yosef. So in the Pardes Yosef on Chanukah, he writes 21 explanations for why Kisvu al Keren Hashur. I mean, there's a lot to think about. Like, what was the intention of Keren Hashur, right on the horn of an ox? Such a strange thing. What's the imagery of the Keren Hashur? He has 21 explanations in the Pardes Yosef on Chanukah for the image of the Keren Hashur. Why the Keren Hashur? Some say it has to do with Chet HaEgel. Some say it has to do with Yosef HaTzadik, Bechor Shur. Yosef's compared to a Shur. Since we're learning Bava Kama this year, and our Masechta begins by discussing a Shur and a Keren, and things of that nature, I want to share with you a comment from the Yisa Bracha from the Majid Tzarebi. The Yisa Bracha, whose yard site actually was about 10 days ago. The Yisa Bracha was the second Majid Tzarebi, passed away in 1948. And in his writings on Bereishis, past year, Shabbos Bereishis, I found the following idea. And I said, oh, this is, since we're learning Bava Kama, what an appropriate idea to share with you. He quotes the Medrash that we just mentioned, the Choshech of Yavan, that they told us to write on the horn of an ox, you don't believe in God. She'ein lachem chelek b'lokei Yisrael. And he quotes from his grandfather, who says that maybe Keren Hashur hainu taivos habahamius. In a very general way, the Keren Hashur represents an animalistic urge, and therefore the Yavanim, who we certainly have a sense of the Greek cultural way, which was very much rooted in taiva, very much rooted in taiva, an elevation in many ways of the body over the spirit. That's why the Svarim HaKadoshim say that Chanukah is gematria guf, right? Because Chanukah is the time where we highlight that the shemen, which is merames to the neshama, it's the same letters as neshama, shemen, neshama, right? Is primary in our lives. And yes, of course we have bodies, we have physical bodies, and Hashem wants us to enjoy physical pleasure. But it can't be with a perversion of the hierarchy of what's what. Shemen, oil, the nature of oils, when you mix it in, it always rises up. It always tries to live an elevated existence. The Yavanim, who had tremendous wisdom, but there was a certain sense in the Greek world, in Greek culture, that the body was even more desirable than the mind. Whether it's the imagery of the Greek Olympics, right, nude Olympics, and very other forms of sexual desire that were dominant in that culture. So he quotes from his grandfather, who says that maybe the Keren Hashur, Kisvu, Keren Hashur, meaning like, come on, like, give up already. Like, stop wasting your time trying to elevate your neshama over your body. Let's be honest. I see my body, I feel my body, it's very real. My neshama is kind of like this floaty idea. Like, once in a while, I feel like I have a neshama, but like, prove you have a neshama. The body's, I can touch it, it's real. So Kisvu, Keren Hashur, just right on the horn of the ox, which declares man's interest in the taivos habahamios, the animalistic urges, which every human being has. And al yidei ze lo yelachem chelek belokei Yisrael. Like, why are you fighting so long? There's an unbelievable insight in Chazal on the attack of Eshes Potiphar upon Yosef at Tzadik, who, by the way, is a Chanukah personality, specifically because when Yosef had that moment of choice, do I elevate my soul, or do I elevate my body? Do I give in to Mrs. Potiphar, or do I refuse her advances? Yosef made the right choice. But if you look in Chazal, if you look in the Medrash says, really based on the Pasuk, it says that she would pester him yom yom. She was bothering him day in and day out. To such a degree that on the day that Yosef actually defeated Eshes Potiphar, that he runs out of the house, leaving his beged behind, leaving his garments behind, so to speak, leaving the physical trappings behind, saying, I'm not choosing physicality over spirituality. She says to him, the way Chazal understands it, that she's bothering him, yom yom, she says to Yosef, what's the point? So you, good, so you beat me today. But yom yom, eventually you're going to give in. It's not like you can be able to refuse the body forever. Come on, the body's real. The taivas are real. So even if you said no to the Yetzirah today, but by tomorrow you're going to give in. So it's like, what's the point of delaying? What's the point of refusing? So the Yavanim wanted us to say, Kiswal Karen Ashur, just admit that the body's eventually going to dominate the neshama. Once in a while, they have a neshama dikaday. But come on, the body's much more real in your life. Let's be honest. Taivas HaBahamios are much more real. And eventually, the body's going to... Ein lachem chelek b'lokei Yisrael. There's no chelek elokam imal inside of you. There's no neshama inside of you. That's what he quotes from his grandfather. But then he says, I want to add a second shot, and it'll resonate with us Jews who are learning Bava Kama this year. He says, I want to add that the Yetzahara is merumas b'keren hashor. The keren hashor is a general reference to the Yetzahara. The keren hashor, the horn of the ox, arba avos nezikin, shor bor ma v'hever. Shor, which might include within it, according to one opinion, as we learned in the Gemara, it might include within it all three, Karen, Shane, Regel, the Karen Hashur. The Karen Hashur, he says, is the Yetzirah. V'lo ra'i Shane, and he quotes the Gemara, Bava Kama Dach Gimel Amud Beis. V'lo ra'i Shane, she'ein kavanasu lahazik, k'ray ha'karen she'kavanasu lahazik. You can't compare the Shane, the tooth, when the animal eats your sandwich on the side of the road, where he's not trying to harm anything, he just has a taiva, he's just giving into a desire. You can't compare that to what? To the category of damages called Karen, which the Gemara defines as what? Kavanaso lahazik, where the intention is to inflict damage. Karen is not just pleasure, it's not just pleasure seeking. And that's what he's adding to his grandfather. The Yavanim were not just saying, it's too hard to resist the pleasures of this world, so you might as well just enjoy it. It's much deeper than that. It's much more evil than that, and it's well disguised, as Rabbi Shnal was just describing. And he quotes Tosos on Daf Gimel Amud Beis, the small Tosos on the bottom of Gimel Amud Beis, relatively small Tosos, at Baba Kama standards, that Kavanaso Lahazik means that when the ox attacks and gores with its horn, Kavanaso Lahazik means Yitzra Takfa. The Yitzhahara is kind of like urging it on. The Yitzhahara is pushing it along. It's not just, well, you know, it was innocent fun. It was too tempting to turn down. It's much more evil than that. And the question I want to pose just for a couple of minutes together is that really true about Yavan? Let's talk for a second. We could point to all of the lowliness of Yavan. We could talk about all the taiva of Yavan. We could talk about all the pleasure-seeking of Yavan. But we could also talk about, in an honest historical context, that Yavan pulled the world out of the Dark Ages. How much more barbaric was the world before Greek philosophy and Greek poetry and Greek advances in science and literature, right? The ability that people should be literate, to be able to read. How much is that the advances of Greek society? To such a degree that we know, the Torah tells us, that Yefes has a place in the world of Shem. The Yefes is the world of Yavan. Yavan comes from the son of Noah called Yefes. We're the descendants of Shem. And the Gemara says very clearly that the Yafusof Shel Yefes, the beauty of Yefes, the splendor of Yefes, the good things that come from Greece, your Yishkon Ba'ol Eishem can dwell in our tents to such a degree that the Rambam even paskins, based on the Gemara and Megillah, the Mishnah and the Gemara there, that you can write a Sefer Torah in Lashon Yavani. Can you imagine walking into a shul and having a Sefer Torah but Lashon Yavani? A whole discussion we've shown them how exactly that works, and it's an ancient Greek language which is not modern, it's not modern Greek, right? But that it has such a place by us, that they value advances in wisdom, in philosophy, thinking, Hashem created us, lahavin ulahaskil, it's a Rashi and Bereshis. To be an Ish Navon, power looks at Yosef Atzalik, says you're a thinking person. The Greeks were thinkers. They weren't pure pleasure seekers. They weren't such barbarians. And to say that Karen Hashur is sort of their defining declaration, Kavanaso lahazik, were the Greeks trying to destroy us? Is choshech the best word to describe the Greeks? But I think, and it's really just adding a little bit to what Rabbi Shnal was saying, what Chazal are clearly hinting to us is that sometimes the enemy that looks the least threatening is in fact the most threatening. The famous Vard of the Beis Halevi and so many others, Hatzileini na miyad achi miyad Esav. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, protect me from my brother if he comes at me like an Esav who wants to kill me. But also Hashem, I'm very nervous that there's going to be an Esav who comes like a brother, who tries to say, let's share ideas. Let's share cultural ideas. We have a lot in common. You like to think and we like to think. You like to advance the world. You try to be a light to the world. We try to be a light to the world. So Chazal say, be so careful when you're dealing with Yavan. It might look like Or, but Lamaisa, it might actually be Choshech. The Choshech of Yavan is the scariest thing of all, and the biggest proof is, and I saw this in a sefer called Beis Genazai by Rav Rafael Luria. He says, if you look in the Torah, it's very clear. Tohu, Bohu, Choshech, Tahom, each of these correspond to a different one of our exiles, a different enemy of the Jewish people. Who does Hashem respond to first? Again, Tohu, Bohu, Choshech, Tahom are in chronological order. The third exile is the battle against the Greeks, is the battle for the menorah, for the Beis HaMikdash. Who does HaKadosh Baruch Hu respond to first in the Torah? Vayom Elokim, Yihi Or, Vayihi Or. Who does Hashem talk to or talk about first? Who is Hashem nervous about? The one who's called Choshech. Hashem is so nervous, the way Rashnal painted it so beautifully with such honest and real examples. The danger of that world of Yavan where it creeps in. It sneaks in. And you'll say, it's not Kavanasu Lahazik, it's not trying to destroy me. But Chazal say, no, Kiswa El Keren Hashur. This is Kavanasu Lahazik. It's trying to destroy you. It's interesting. Eshes Potifar, you look in Chazal, she's bouncing back and forth from trying to convince Yosef that it's a mitzvah for her to be with him, and saying, Yosef, if you don't sleep with me, I'm going to murder you. I'm going to kill you. In a kotza la kotza. It's one woman. On the one hand, she says to Yosef, she's trying to threaten him to be with her, or I'm going to murder you, I'm going to kill you. She's threatening him physically. She's trying to lure him in with taiva. But Rashi also says, she says, oh, I see in the stars we're meant to be together. It's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah for us to be together. This is not out of bounds. So Chazal are very quick, and the Torah is very quick. This is choshech, be careful. It might look like or. It might disguise itself as or. It might look like it's not so threatening, but it might embody all of the negativity in the world. That Hashem's response right off the bat is Yehi Or Vayehi Or. Hashem says, let there be light, O Rezu Torah. Don't make any mistake about it. You look in the Shem Yishmuel and other Sifrei Chasidus, they say an interesting remez. They say the word Choshech, actually also, the word Choshech alludes to the fact that Yavan, you have to understand, our Rishnal again was explaining it very well. The world of Yavan never ended. The fact that we found the Pach Shemen and got the Beis HaMikdash back, and it lasted for another 207 years, right? The Rambam writes the Beis HaMikdash was restored about the midway point of Bayasheni. Other sources tell us that the Hanukkah story took place in the year 213, which means that post-Hanukkah, there were 207 years to go. Bayasheni was another 207 years. 207 is Gematria Or. So from the time of the miracle of the menorah, it was Or. They relit. But that Or is still under attack. Yavan never ended. Did Galus Yavan ever end? Where do you think we are today with Western culture? Yavan never ended. The developments of that culture just rolled in to the world of Esav, of Edom, of again, the ones who destroyed the second Beis HaMikdash and have left us in the last 2,000 years of exile. So it never really ended. And it's still a tremendous physical threat, spiritual threat, existential threat, whatever you want to call it, that Choshech is still very real in the world today. I think it's easy for us to say that the world in many ways has gotten darker. In many, many ways. So the Shem Yishmuel says, the Rebbe of Sokotchev said, look at the word Choshech. Ches, Shin, Chav. It alludes to all three enemies, the three biggest enemies of the Jewish people. All embody, Choshech is Yavan, but also contained within it is Ches, Shin, and Chav. Shem Yishmuel says, it's a very deep idea, I'll try to say it just very quickly, that Ches, Shin, and Chav stands for Chamor, Shur, Kelev. Donkey, Shur is the ox, and Kelev is the dog. Which of our enemies is compared to a Chamor? Who's compared to a Chamor? Shvu lachem poem, a Chamor, on the way to Akiras Yitzchak, Avram says, Yishmael, you stay here. Gemara says that Yishmael is an Am that's Domel lechamor. Yishmael, think about militant Islam today. Think about what the world of Yishmael has brought, the terror that it's brought to the world today. That's the Ches of Choshech. Shin is Shur. Who's compared to a Shur? Chazal say that Esav is compared to a Shur. And who's compared to a dog? Who's compared to the Kelev? Who's compared to the Kelev? The Kelev, of course, the Malik is compared in Medrashei Chazal, in the words of Chazal, to the dog. So says the Shem Yishmuel, when you look at Yavan and you say, they're not so bad. A little Greek philosophy, some new ideas, some arts and culture. They dragged us out of the Dark Ages. That's not Choshech. But what's hinted to in that word Choshech is they have everything within them. Chamor, Shor, Kelev, there's some Yishmael. There's some Esav, there's some Amalek, there's a lot of really destructive things. And Keren Ashur means Kavanasa Lahazik. That's what we learn in our Masechta Bava Kama. To understand the nature of this enemy. To understand that Keren and Shane and Regel are all embodied within that shore. Keren, Shane, and Regel, as far as I'm saying, is Gematria Sheker. Rashi Tevos Sheker. Keren, Shane, and Regel is Rashi Tevos Sheker. The three things that are all coupled together. Hakina va taiva va kavod motina sa adam in olam. It's not as innocent as it looks sometimes. It starts off kind of innocent. But before you know it, you start to realize, wait a minute, this is not so innocent. Kavanasa lahazik. It may not be a stated objective of the world to destroy my spirit by offering me arts and entertainment and culture like Rishna was describing. But as you immerse yourself in it, all of a sudden you start to see, this is destroying me. And Kavanasa lahazik is to carry this short. So Mir Tashem, we should understand full well who we're up against. I'll just end with the words of Rav Elchanan Wasserman, a very insightful comment that Rav Elchanan has in the Kovetz Ma'amarim in the first volume on page 35 in the two-volume edition. Rav Elchanan says, if you look again in the davening that we insert into our Shemona Esrei and into our benching, we refer to the awesome miracle that Hashem did for us. How HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed the weak to defeat the strong. Big miracle. Hashem allowed the few to defeat the many. Also makes a lot of sense. What does it mean when it says that Tameyim Biyad Tahorim? Hashem allowed the Tamei ones to be given over to the Tahor ones. What does it mean, Zaydim Biyad Oske Sarasecha? Why is that a miracle? Why is it a miracle that people who are Tahor defeat people who are Tamei? You want to tell me an army that's weak defeated an army that's strong? I see that's miraculous. You want to tell me an army that's few defeated an army that's many? I understand why that's miraculous. Why? What's miraculous about the fact that Jews who are Tahor defeated an enemy who's Tamei? And the answer is, Rav Elchanan says, the Jewish people sometimes in our innocence, in our tahara, right, in our you know, Yaakov Ish Tam Yoshev Olam, in our wholesomeness, we don't even realize who the enemy is. And therefore, when someone who's Tahor fights against someone who's Tamei, the rules of war are different. We don't fight in a dirty way that they fight against us. A person who learns Torah, a person who's Osek B'Sorasecha, fights differently than someone who's labeled as Zaydim or Temeim. And therefore, we have to understand the nature of this enemy. We can't, you know, in our desire to be Dan Lekaf Tzchus, we can't say, it's not such a threat. It's not so bad. That's what the Yisra Bracha, that's what the Majlis Rebbe is teaching us. It's a Keren Ashur, which defined by Argamar Bava Kamadav Gimel means Kavanasa Lahazik. It's trying to take us down whether we realize it or not. So we should not be inappropriately innocent in our response. We have to understand that there's a miracle when Tahorim defeat Temeim. When nice yeshiva bachrim, who are Oske Sorasecha, are able to defeat Zaydim, those who are out to get you. It's something we have to appreciate. If we still have a sense of what's what, and who the good guys are and who the bad guys are, right, that's a big bracha, and it's something that we need to constantly work on. So Mir Tzashem, we should be zocha. We should be zocha to remove that Keren Ashur, which is declaring Ein Lechem Chelek B'Elokei Yisrael, and to very loudly and very proudly declare Yesh Lanu Chelek B'Elokei Yisrael. We're still very much aware of where our portion lies in this world. And then Amir Tzashem will be able to remove all of those kochos of negativity, the Chamor, the Shur, the Kelev, the Esavs of the world, the Yishmals of the world, the Amaleks of the world, and see the Gula B'Mehar B'Aminu.
Alright, Rabbi Say.
35. It's a chiddush.